My school board experience.
The meeting will come to order, please. Members, would you look over the minutes, please? Representative Benson, would you be willing to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have read the minutes and I move to approve them.
Thank you. Representative Benson moves approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Yeah, I don't have any audio. Oh, guess what? Well, we might have to do that again. Testing 1, 2, 3. Recording, but we have no. Well, it sounds like we do. Yes. Testing 1, 2, 3.
And she was a star.
So, do I have to have Representative Benson do that again? I think we're okay. I think since it was recording, it's okay. Members, this morning we are beginning with questions, continuation of questions and testimony in regard to Representative Mariani's bill, House File 3. And I believe Ms. Alswiger, you wanted to come forth and make some comments. And then we'll have, I think, a couple of others in the audience who might want to do the same.
Good morning. Oh. Nice to get up in the morning and just kind of get moving.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Alswiger, and identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alswiger, Education Minnesota. It's my pleasure to be here before you today to speak about alternative teacher licensure. I think that the presentation that occurred last week was a very good presentation, and Education Minnesota supports a number of alternative licensing proposals. And just to lay it out, our general proposal or position is that Education Minnesota supports alternative licensing, but we do not support alternative standards. And then you could have some debates about what are the standards. But we believe that there should be other routes for teachers to be able to be licensed. I didn't, Madam Chair, understand that I'd be up here first thing, so I might have to shuffle through a couple of pieces of paper here. Overall, I would just like to remind the committee of Education Minnesota's overall positions as well, and that we don't believe that shortcuts into the classroom mean that we should be able to shortcut teacher quality, and that there are certain reasons why we definitely should put more emphasis on alternative license routes, and that could be when there's a shortage of teachers in a particular area, subject-wise or geographic areas. We believe that these alternative programs should be or must be connected to a college, because the colleges have been working with the Board of Teaching to set standards for alternative licensing, and then we can have a consistent standard where we have an outside organization, the higher ed institution, that has invested a lot of time in preparing teachers. And so if an individual goes through an alternative route, they would still maintain those standards. I am not going to make any particular comments on other organizations, as I hinted to earlier. I am going to talk specifically about the Mariani bill. I believe, Madam Chair, that you want me to comment only on the Mariani bill. Is that correct?
Ms. Olswiger, you can comment on both, unless you want to come to the table again after Representative Garofalo's bill. So go ahead and make your statements now if you prefer that.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, because this is the Mariani bill, I have specific language that would that I can probably help with that one. And then when you get into the details, because the bills are very different, it might be better if it's okay with the chair to come later to testify to specifics on that one.
Ms. Olswiger, that'd be just great.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would first of all like to say to Representative Mariani that I think he's done a wonderful job in making some changes and working on the bill to make it continually to be a better quality. And we generally like what he has done. I have a couple of recommendations. I'm here to try to help improve the bill for the quality of teaching and for the quality of instructions for our kids. So I will look directly at the bill, and I think we're looking at DE3. On 1.16, I would just like to commend Representative Mariani for continuing to keep the college and university connection. In line 1.18, just so that you know that when you use the word one on 1.18, then you are saying that it is 1, 2, or 3, and by looking at line 1.25, you'll see the word or. So 1, 2, or 3 is an option. If
Madam Chair,
Representative, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't. You said DE3 because I thought I saved my stuff, but I don't see it in my folder, and now I don't seem to be on the right bill or amendment.
Members, you should have the House File 3 DE3 in your files.
We don't.
Yes, probably in your save file.
I thought I did save it, and it isn't in my save file.
And Pages, where are you? Would you make sure that members have that? Thank you, Representative Greiling. Check your save files, everyone.
I have my packet for today,
but it's not. Ms. Olswiger, you might have to back up and just make those notations again. For the sake of members who didn't have their correct copies. Do we have enough copies so we can do some sharing until the pages can run some more? This is like the officials in the game calling timeout. Sorry about this.
Isn't this it? Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Members, I'll remind the pages that when something is continued, if you do not have something in your save file, you need to be updated. I'm sorry, I did not check that this morning. I thought they were so busy adding new stuff that I didn't think about old. Okay, Ms. Olswiger, will you continue?
Okay. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the point that I was making that at line 1.18, maybe I'll be a little bit more specific just in case someone doesn't have a copy. It says that a program approved under paragraph A may only offer this program if one of the following conditions exist. So I just want to remind the legislators that you only have to have one of these possibilities, not all three. And that is even more clear by the 1.25 where it says or. On line 1.21, this is just a question. It, the words too few qualified candidates, what does that mean? Does too few qualified candidates mean 50? Does it mean 2? Does it mean 0? Does it mean somebody that I just don't, there isn't anybody that I just like, there could be 100? I think that there is some vagueness to that language. On page 2, on line 2.2, to participate in this program, a candidate must have a bachelor's degree with either, and a key word is either, a minimum of 3.0 grade point, or meet other criteria specified by the Board of Teaching. We would recommend that you would go with other criteria specified by the Board of Teaching, because you could also include the 3.0. The 3.0 GPA is a good idea, but we believe that a 3.0 may not be enough to have the criteria high enough for a qualified candidate. So we would recommend having the criteria specified by the Board of Teaching and include 3.0. And then going to page 3, line 3.1, it says that approval for a standard license, a local site team that may include school administrators. The word may, we believe, should be must. Because the word may really means that you could have anybody on the committee that you want. It could, you could exclude people, or you could include additional people. And we think that the words must should be included, and that all of those individuals, administrators, teachers, secondary faculty, post-secondary faculty, should be included in that team. On line 3.3, we think it is very good that they refer to that the performance of the teacher candidate under rules, Minnesota Rules, Part 8710.2000, is included. That is, those rules refer to the standards of effective practice. Standards of effective practice are the standards by which teachers must meet, and it's the general standard for all teachers. It doesn't matter if you're a high school teacher, science teacher, elementary teacher, middle school teacher, facts teacher. It doesn't matter what you teach. You all have to meet the standards of effective practice. To make this stronger and better for kids and for teachers, we believe that it should, you should also include the content-specific standards. So there are standards for high school science teachers. There are standards for elementary teachers, standards for math teachers. And if you want the highest quality teacher, then we believe that in addition to the standards of effective practice, you should also include the content areas. On line 3.6, to issue a standard license, the Board of Teaching may issue a standard license to an otherwise qualified teacher candidate. We think that that is good. I just wanted to commend Representative Mariani for doing that. In past language, it said must, and we believe that the Board of Teaching should have the authority to either approve or deny a license based on what they view as the standard. So we think that that is very good. On line 3.9, this will probably be the biggest sticking issue that we have, and that is that we believe, Education Minnesota believes, that before an individual actually becomes the teacher of record, that they should go through a student teaching type process. What does a teacher of record mean? Because this is important. You will see this phrase throughout the alternative license debate. What is a teacher of record? A teacher of record is the individual who has the authority of the classroom, that they are totally responsible for those kids, for the discipline, for the classroom management, for the instruction. They are the teacher of record. Education Minnesota believes that before an individual is allowed to be the teacher of record, that they should demonstrate their ability to teach in an ongoing, every day, full day, many days of student teaching so that they can manage a classroom, be in charge of instruction, adapt instruction, communicate with parents, handle the issues that occur on a day-to-day basis. We don't believe that a student teaching experience is a real life experience if you have an hour a day or a couple of hours a day. When you when you have a full classroom, you are managing 30 kids and their parents and their needs and the school administration and the curriculum and the discipline, and that is what makes teaching a science and an art. And in order to be very successful, teachers should go through that student teaching experience. And Education Minnesota believes that if an individual doesn't do well in the student teaching experience, they should not continue. Just like Education Minnesota also believes, and I want you to listen carefully to this, if a teacher is not doing well in the probationary period, the administrator should not renew them. We want quality individuals in the teaching profession. We want quality individuals that go into an alternative licensing program, and we want them to demonstrate that they can manage a classroom, they can instruct 30 kids all at one time, every day, ongoing, day after day. Our belief is that it should be 90 days, and certainly we're willing to talk about that. But that proves that they have at least that initial ability to go forward. I remind you, every day, all day, 25, 30, 35 kids, maybe a classroom with the same kids all day, maybe 7 periods a day where you're switching subjects, switching kids, coming in and out. It's a science, it's an art. Education Minnesota stands here today because we believe we should not make it easier to become a teacher. We should have quality people in our teaching profession. If other organizations can prepare them through a 200-hour program or whatever, we're willing to work with you on that. Our main issue is, let's make sure that these individuals are supervised by a licensed Minnesota teacher in a Minnesota classroom with Minnesota curriculum, Minnesota standards, so that they know what they, so we know what they're getting, and so parents do as well. I think if you review historically where Education Minnesota has been, where we are today, you will see that we have done a fine job of compromising, a great job of listening, but still maintaining the quality for our kids that they deserve. And I say to you that Education Minnesota is willing to talk to anyone who has any ideas about how to make this language better, how to improve the abilities of our teachers, to offer opportunities for people who are mid-career professionals that want to change and become a teacher, for areas where we have shortages and we need to fill those positions. We encourage you to talk to us, call us. We will come and speak with you to try to come up with something that works. But number one, I just remind you, it's all about the quality. And I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Elsweiger. Members, are your cell phones turned off? I think that's why we're getting feedback. Will you just double-check that? Are there questions for Ms. Elsweiger?
Madam Chair, my wife could give birth really any hour, so I'm keeping it on. I put it underneath my seat, and I think that got rid of the
Representative Peterson, so. We understand. Thank you. Thank you for being here this morning. If your wife's about to deliver, I think you should meet with her. We understand, Representative Peterson. So I hope you hear the vibration. Or feel it, I should say. Not hear it.
Neither do I.
Not as far as you.
No. Right. Yeah, that would not be good.
No. Representative Mariani, I think you may need to go to the testifying table to be ready to answer some questions.
No.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the table, Representative Mariani, and you better identify yourself for the record because I think you're going to get a few questions along the way.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlos Mariani, the chief author of House File 3.
And members, are there some questions for Representative Mariani before we move to other testifiers?
Madam Chair, perhaps I can answer some.
Yes, will you go ahead, Representative Mariani? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I took some notes, and I, unfortunately, I left my files at home today, so I'm going to have to recall mostly from memory here. But I just want to respond very quickly to the testimony. And first of all, I want to say that from the very beginning, in a very bipartisan manner for the last couple of years, we have, in fact, focused on the issue of quality. That's what the whole purpose is here. There are others who have characterized it as it's not about quality. So it's good to know that everyone's now singing on the same note in that regard. And I also want to reemphasize that from the very beginning, we set out to, in fact, set Minnesota standards. And that's why the bill has very explicit outcomes and very spelled out standards. Very quickly on the points, there's some, I think, some useful information that was shared on the previous testimony. I think on this issue of the 1, 2, or 3, the three-part members is the achievement gap issue. Okay. And I think it's about time that the people of the state of Minnesota step up and say, indeed, it is a vitally, critically important issue. I was yesterday with the mayor of Newark, Cory Booker. I had the privilege to sit with him at lunch and chat with him. And he shared that when he had asked General Colin Powell after receiving a long briefing about nuclear proliferation and, you know, sort of military preparedness issues that our nation was facing, he asked the general, so what do you think is the most critically important issue for our nation? What's the biggest threat to our nation? And his answer without blinking was, the biggest threat to our nation is the undereducation of our young people. The achievement gap issue goes directly to that issue, and I think it merits a district being coming forward and saying we want to be able to have multiple pathways to address that issue. On the question of the too few, the determination of the too few, the bill actually spells out who will make that determination. The determination is made by the participating district or charter schools, and who's in a better position to make that determination about their need for teachers than the local school districts and charter schools that we entrust with the education of our young people. On the 3.0 issue versus the and, I think we can, you know, definitely go back and forth in terms of trying to figure out what's the right level here. I think what we're trying to do, frankly, was to establish this sense that, you know, maybe a student has a 2.85, but boy, you know, it shows incredible promise. I think there's some kind of Minnesota about that value of being a little bit flexible, but we can certainly set that bar much more rigidly and have that discussion. On the issue of whether districts must or may, I think it was subdivision 5, may include the local school site team, may include school administrators, teachers, and post-secondary faculty members. The issue there, frankly, members, has to do with small school districts that may be limited in terms of the human resource personnel they can bring together to bear to be able to form those local sites, local site teams. And so we wanted to make sure that there was some flexibility on that issue. I think the comment, the further comment on the content-specific standards is a good idea, a good recommendation in Subdivision 5, and I think we should seriously look at that as well as the affirmation of the Board of Teaching may issue a standard entrance license. We don't want to just totally take the ability of the Board of Teaching to make intelligent decisions on our part. We have empowered that panel through state statute to make professional decisions based on educational, the best educational standards on our part. Then, of course, the big issue, the teacher record issue, we probably can't be further apart on that issue. I would only remind you of the testimony offered last week, particularly from the KIPP school, the reference to the Harvest Prep School. We haven't heard from Minneapolis or Brooklyn Center. But I think what they would all tell you is that these candidates come to us very well prepared, and they're doing a good job, and we're very confident of their ability to be the teacher of record. Otherwise, they wouldn't be placing them in the classrooms. And so, I think it's a good issue to raise. We should be very careful with that issue. However, I think the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding right now is saying, you know, this is working pretty well in our school districts. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'll stop and see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Are there questions?
I think Representative Norton,
I know I saw your hand up. Representative Peterson, why don't you lead off, as long as you have in front of you.
Representative, I like to make data-driven decisions whenever possible. What data do you have as it relates to the 90-day supervision period with a certified teacher? Do you have any, or maybe just take us through the data that led to that decision or inclusion in the bill?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I don't have that provision in the bill. Are you asking? You're probably referring to the amendment.
The amendment.
I'm sure that's not my amendment. I think that goes to the issue of the teacher of record, however, issue that I just mentioned. And again, I think that, you know, I have, it's a fair question in terms of the what the data is. I guess I can only refer you to the testimony we had last week from one of the alternative high quality teacher pathway programs, TFA, where they shared four or five research, nationwide research reports that indicated the efficacy of their teacher candidates. And those are teacher candidates that are currently being placed in classrooms around the state without the 90-day or some other kind of prescribed over and above what they're currently doing in terms of supervising their teacher candidates. I think you should be, you know, if that gets into play, I think we should be very deliberate, very careful, and give full discussion of the merits of adding that additional expectation of teacher candidates. I think, again, the proof is in the pudding, and I think that those research reports show us that there is a different way to do this without and maintain high quality without having to go to the 90-day requirement.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I also, Representative Mariani, think I recall, and I'm just looking for some clarification. I have just a couple questions. But the first is, I also thought I heard the department or the Board of Teaching talk about community experts and limited teacher licenses, and none of those individuals, to my knowledge, are required to have any 90 days, 10 days, or anything. They're just permitted in a classroom and take it from day one, and we don't monitor them at all. So we would be putting a higher expectation on these program graduates that you're talking about than we do currently on community experts or limited license, if I understood that correctly.
Madam Chair,
Representative Mariani.
Representative Norton, that's my understanding as well. And of course, I suspect that school districts are, you know, responding to very immediate needs and trying to do the best that they can to provide some good structures for those community experts to operate effectively in their schools. In this bill, we provide some direction to school districts to do the same with these teacher candidates.
And Madam Chair?
A follow-up, Representative.
I have two other little points I want to make. Yeah. One had to do with the 3.0, Madam Chair, that we were talking about. And I guess one of the things we've talked about down in our area is, should the 3.0 be for their... should it be limited to just that they graduated with a particular score, whether it be 3.0 or 2.8 or 3.5, and this ties to the content standard area, or do these teachers who are being hired for a shortage area, for instance, if you're a middle school math teacher, should not the expectation be that they have a 3.0 or 3.5 or 2.8 in the content area that they're going to teach? and that and this comes from discussion with superintendents down in southern Minnesota, that they're very interested in making certain that the teachers they have a high knowledge of the content area they're going to be teaching, not just that they graduated from college with a GPA. So I just throw that out there for further thought as we move forward with this. And the last little piece was the shortage area that we talked about. And as I recall, again, from either, I think this might have been from the Department of Ed, that there are identified by the federal government as well as the state shortage areas. And as I understand it, you're not limiting it to those identified shortage areas, but you're leaving it up to the school. Is that what I understood?
Representative Mariani.
Chair and Representative Norton, that's correct. It's interesting that even for me to learn that even in this day and age when we have, in fact, in some districts face some pretty tough budget realities, that teachers have been laid off, and yet that you could still have shortage areas. And I think it just really shows that there are different realities that occur across districts. So obviously, smaller, greater Minnesota districts are much more challenged in terms of being able to have a bigger pool to draw from for specific top or contents or pedagogies. For instance, my understanding is ELL and special ed is a real big demand and tough area to fill for many of our smaller, our greater Minnesota communities. And similarly, some of the urban core, close to the urban core school districts, they're also facing some very specific shortage areas. I think it's important, for us to let the folks who are on the ground be able to make that determination. I also want to say very quickly that this issue, and it's a good issue for us to struggle with, making sure we've got the best competent, both in pedagogy and in content, teachers matching up where there's a great need. It's really important for us to address this issue. This bill alone won't do that. We had terrific testimony a year or two ago from the SciMath folks. And I forget the gentleman from University of Michigan, who's a national researcher and thought leader on SciMath standards, Schmidt, Dr. Schmidt, who pointed out that as he looked at I think it was the NAEP results in math, an interesting thing popped out for him, and that was that in certain districts, they're meeting the needs. There's no shortage in many districts of science and math instructors. However, the levels of knowledge of those teachers differ according to geographic area, and according to income. And so basically with lower income districts, you may have a certified math teacher, a person who may not be as competent with emerging math, physics, as you might find in some other districts. This is a big issue if we're going to push the issue of high quality outcomes for all students in the state.
Members, we do have Mr. Blankenship in the audience. If you had questions in regard to Teach for America, as you recall, he testified. Representative Greiling, would you like to have him come down? Mr. Blankenship, would you come down, please, and join Representative Mariani and Representative Greiling. You may ask your question. Mr. Blankenship, please identify yourself for the record. And
Hi, Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling has a question.
Madam Chair, my name is Shannon Blankenship. I was a 2001 Teach for America Corps member in New York City. And now the executive director of Hiawatha Academies in Minneapolis.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, my question was for Mr. Sellers. I thought he was coming back.
Mr. Sellers is in Florida, and so Mr. Blankenship is here on his behalf.
All right, then, Madam Chair. Mr. Blankenship, yes. I wondered, and again, somebody took what I saved out of my folder, so I don't have my notes. I had them, and I carefully put them in, which is why I remember that I put them in my saved folder. But there was a PowerPoint that Mr. Sellers went through, and it had the the evaluation of the Linda Darling Hammond study, and another one that were not favorable to Teach for America. And then it had on the page before that several studies that backed up Teach for America, but it did not contain that same ranking. And I'm wondering what ranking, using that same measure that was given to the other two studies, the studies that were favorable to Teach for America received.
Mr. Blankenship.
Yeah, Representative, Madam Chair Erickson and Representative Greiling, I actually don't have the specific answer to that, but I can definitely circle back and get a response for you on that particular slides or slides probably within the next 24 to 48 hours.
Okay. Representative Greiling, I do have a handout, so we'll make sure that, you know, you get a copy of it. Go ahead and ask your follow-up.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Blankenship. I would appreciate that information, because I think when you're going to evaluate some studies negatively, you should give us equal information for both of the studies. And as you know, I am a supporter of Teach for America. My granddaughter did very well in Washington, D.C., having a Teach for America teacher. So I'm not trying to denigrate the information, but I'd like to have the information. If you're going to defend information, then you have to have the information in the first place. My other question for you is regarding the Representative Mariani's bill that's under consideration and the part about the university connection. And you might not be the best person for that either because you're from New York, but this is the question I would like, and if you can answer it, otherwise I would like that also from Mr. Sellers. And that is it's something that I feel strongly about, and that is the university connection that Representative Mariani's bill has. And we know that in Minnesota, unlike most if not all other states, Teach for America does have the relationship with Hamline University, and I thought that was a very strong part of Representative Mariani's bill. I had the privilege of sitting down with him and people in Minnesota colleges and universities as he crafted that what I think is excellent language. And but that is not in the Representative Garofalo's bill. And when we get to that, I would not be able to, despite being a supporter of Teach for America, to support Representative Garofalo's bill because it doesn't contain that, in my mind, very important connection. So what is your position, or what is Teach for America's position on that discrepancy between the two bills?
Mr. Blankenship.
Representative Greiling, I can't comment on Teach for America's position here locally on that, but I can provide for you, particularly from and to the members of the committee, perspective from a school principal that has both hired teachers who have gone through just the traditional Teach for America training program as well as fulfilled their two-year commitment, and who have not completed potentially a master's degree or had a formal relationship with a college or university. As well as comment on current teachers that I have that do have that partnership with Hamline. I think the message that I'd like to share with the members of the Academy today and to address particularly your concern is it's really about outcomes. I have teachers at my school who have taught now for 5 years and did Teach for America in other regions who didn't necessarily take ongoing classes to work towards their master's degrees or teaching licenses in the states that they taught in, but when I hired them, had extremely high results. And so by that meaning, looking at state assessment data that is sort of normed across a particular state. For example, I have one particular teacher that is a native Minnesotan who happened to teach in New York City. In New York City, they give the two state exams and city exams every year. And she was able to clearly demonstrate that her students in math, for example, had grown. Not only had met a certain level of proficiency that I felt was comfortable to make sure that she was going to be equipped to teach our students, but also was able to provide some quantitative data to sort of back up that sense of effectiveness. That being said, I also have current members of the Teach for America Corps here at Hamline, as well as other Teach for America alumni who did go through that traditional route, and I think you'll find that their experience is pretty mixed in terms of the effectiveness and use of not only their personal financial resources to take the classes necessary to get their master's degrees, but also the time that they had to invest. What I mean specifically to that is there are many members of my team who are forced to take classes that they find very little applicability to their day-to-day workings of the students that we're serving, and not only are frustrated by the fact that they're putting in a 50-60-hour work week and then extra classes on top of that, it's the financial resources that they're having to invest. And so I think the sort of the answer that people probably don't want to hear is that it depends on that experience. With that, I'll defer back to Mr. Sellers to answer specifically on Teach for America's position here in Minnesota. So.
Thank you, Mr. Blankenship. Representative Greiling, more?
One last question.
Yes, go ahead.
Chair, Representative Mariani, is that language optional to you?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I think it's an important component. I think that, excuse me, the way that I've approached this bill is that understanding that for Minnesota, this is a bit of a big step, that we wanted to make sure that we had some very strong quality conditions and expectations of any program, regardless of how they operate in other states. And I hear Mr. Blankenship's description of the individual struggles that people can have relative to this, but I think at the end, it provides us as policymakers yet another sort of sense of security and assuredness of the wisdom of our move to open up multiple pathways. I think it also, frankly, opens up a long-term, hopefully deeper, meaningful relationship between the community of higher ed and these alternative pathways that could have some potentially good benefits bouncing back into higher ed. So in other words, the point here isn't just to, first and foremost, to provide some quality assurances with our teacher candidates, but it's also, frankly, to try to infect, if you will, back at the higher ed, the lessons of being creative in terms of how they design their traditional teacher education programs. So I like to think of it as a win-win, and it's tough, but all good things are tough, and I think it's a critically important component of my bill.
Thank you, Mr. Blankenship. I see Kelly Wolf standing. Did you want to say something? Yes. please identify yourself for the record and answer those questions which you can answer.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Wolf. I am with Leonard Street and Dinard, and here today on behalf of Teach for America. I'm a former Teach for America teacher as well. I apologize, Mr. Sellers could not be back, but he will be here actually this afternoon. He's been out of town. So for those of you that have questions that we have not been able to answer, will not be able to answer this morning, we can certainly get back to you as early as this afternoon with those. Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, in response to some of your questions, I don't have a grade, and I'm not sure that the studies you referenced that were supportive. There's an Urban Institute study, University of North Carolina study, as well as a study out of Tennessee on their teacher prep programs that were all very supportive of Teach for America. I am not aware if Education Week or anybody evaluated those studies. I do know that the two studies that were critical of Teach for America did receive a D and a C in regards to their methodology for using small sample sizes and not controlling for demographics and some of the other school factors. So I know that those two have been graded. I'm not sure on the others, but we will certainly double check and see if there have been any grades on their evaluation methods. In terms of the linkage with higher education, what I can say is we have had a wonderful working relationship with Hamline. They have been fantastic. Our core members have thoroughly enjoyed it. They've been strong supporters, and We hope to continue working with them. That being said, I think the preference long-term is to have a delinkage with higher education. And I think that's more for kind of long-term viability and sustainability of a program. What we don't want to have happen is at some point, if Hamline ever decides to not participate, or if there are any changes to administration, or things happen for whatever reason and they pull out, then we're left with trying to find another higher education partner. So I think the more flexibility that can be provided to Teach for America, the better. It just allows us to kind of have a more viable, sustaining program going forward. And having it up front linked with a higher education institution, I think, would be problematic. And I know, of course, I don't speak for other alternative programs, but I know that there are other institutions that may be interested, Montessori-type schools, that I think a higher education linkage could be problematic for. So certainly we've supported Representative Mariani's bill in the past, and currently we have a working relationship with a higher education institution that is working. However, the preference is to have that delinkage, which just gives us greater flexibility for the program moving forward.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. We have Eugene Piccolo, who would like to testify. Please say your name for the record, Mr. Piccolo, and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Just to put a little context, the Association of Charter Schools, Minnesota Charter Schools, supports legislation in terms of looking at the whole issue of licensure and relicensure. We believe that both initial and relicensure needs to be looked at in the state, especially as we move to digital learning and the different requirements that entails, the need for interdisciplinary licensure, that is an issue that's been before this committee for many years too, and also relicensure requirements. In particular, with regard to alternative licensure, the proposals here, we support the concept, especially in areas of academics where there's a need for teachers and particular difficulty in recruiting teachers. We do not oppose the linkage to higher education, although we would support and encourage that some kind of provision be put in there that higher educational institutions be those that are moving forward to changing how they train teachers, because the teacher training in many institutions has not changed for many, many years. As you know, there's many of our colleges and universities that train teachers are part of the Bush program, and we believe that there should be some linkage to changes in how that is done. So that's just our position on these issues. And we support flexibility, that there needs to be more than one model. We support the Teach for America model, but we believe that legislation should be able to have other models besides Teach for America. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Are there other members from the public who wish to testify? Very briefly. Please say your name for the record, Mr. Bartholomew, and welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I'll just do a quick twofer. We'd encourage you to support both Representative Mariani's bill and Representative Garofalo's bill later. And in essence, we think both bills help create a broad selection of qualified teachers for all our schools and districts. But by providing needed options for attracting additional talented individuals to enter the teaching profession. And this is especially true, as was mentioned earlier, in the STEM areas. So again, this is just trying to create as broad a pool of talented individuals to enter our classrooms as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Mr. Heller, are you coming forward? Did you want to speak for just a minute?
Chair, Madam Chair, could I hand out these flyers since my first introduction?
You would have to check with the pages, so I would say.
They're all on the internet.
Thank you. Why don't you give them to the pages?
Okay.
Please say your name for the record. Mr. Heller, we're very tight for time here, so a couple minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee of the Reform. My name is Richard Heller. I was up at the Capitol last couple of years talking about universal design for learning, and I believe Carlos has his copy too. However, what's coming around are two packets, one that talks specifically about how the NEA has partnered up with CAS Consortium and proposed rules. Since this specific committee is about Minnesota rules, I'd like to ask a question, and perhaps the department can answer it. On page House File 3, is it? DE3, page 2, line 3.3. Minnesota Rule Part 87, 10.2000. I'm not too familiar with rules. I'm still trying to study them. Perhaps the department could tell us how universal design for learning fits into that. If you go to the proposed rule handout, I have flagged all the pages that talk about universal design. Since special ed kids are in those classes, I don't believe they're all covered. And again, it's my concern that the current regulations may be biased, and you might consider this information. And that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And I'll review these documents, and you can stop to see me in my office after I've reviewed them so that I can see in what way they might relate to the rule that you have referenced. Ms. Baum?
I will be putting this up to the library so other individuals, shareholders in this room can look at those as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Ms. Baumer, did you need to? Yes, please. Please say your name for the record and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Karen Vollmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching, members of the committee. I simply wanted to make our board available for questions that you may have in these really important and complex discussions that you're having. We have taken a position of support for these measures and moving forward in these ways, and are certainly happy to help inform the discussion as however would be helpful. So just wanted to make that offer and make ourselves a supporter of this discussion before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Vollmer. Members, there are a couple of questions. Yes, go ahead. Please say your name for the record and welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Mary Ciccone, Parents United for Public Schools. We are also in support of House File 3. I just wanted to point out one piece in House File 3 that's of great value. We tend to say money wisely spent. And in House File 3, a provision that hasn't been talked about this morning is that the Board of Teaching must submit an interim report on the efficacy of this program. We really believe that that you as legislators and we as the public really need to understand and look at the research, and you would have something in which to move the bill forward later on after a year or 2 years to see if the efficacy of the program is there. I think that's a really important provision in this bill. I just wanted to point it out because it was one that hadn't been spoken of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ciccone. That was a very good reference to make. Members, there are a couple of amendments. Are they going to be offered to House File 3, the DE3 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Kapp.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to offer the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment has been offered by Representative Kapp. Please explain your amendment.
Members, before you, and I think I want to preface this with just our general conversation that we've had since our last time together till now, as well as that I want to reference back to last session, too. As we're taking a look at the issues before us in alternative licensure, so often the conversation has been centered around Teach for America and the quality of candidate that they have that can come into our classrooms. And I guess I want to shift us off that beam a little bit to say that this isn't just about Teach for America. In fact, this has very little to do with Teach for America in the context that Teach for America already exists within our public schools and still is, even without this bill in existence. And so I think we have to preface that, because this bill really isn't about Teach for America, otherwise it would say so. It says that the Board of Teaching may approve teacher preparation programs that are an alternative to a post-secondary teacher preparation program. And that is that any program, anyone, can present a program, and as long as they fit these standards, that they can move forward. So this isn't just about a Teach for America program. So I want us to think about that in the broad context of what other organizations may be coming forward and wanting to create one of these, and how do we then measure the standards by which they are going to present a teacher to be a teacher of record in our classrooms. First off, I want to comment to Ms. Alswager when she was talking about a teacher going into a classroom of 25. I want to know what district that is, because I'm in a classroom of four different courses that I teach, and they're all at 37 to 39. So I would like to know the data on that, because I would like to teach there. But the idea here is that we're trying to train a teacher and get them ready to go into a classroom and make sure that when they become that teacher of record, that they are offering quality work from the get-go. Mainly because I don't want those first 90 days to be an experiment. I want to know that they have the standards and that they're able to get in there and be effective from day one. And so the A3 amendment is probably familiar to many of you. You've seen it before here. And that was with the DE4 amendment that Representative Mariani had before you. And that is just saying that all teacher prep programs, including alternative, must use the TAP or the teacher, the TPA, Teacher Performance Assessment, as a standard by which then they would judge that candidate before they would go into the classroom. There's three different things that they must demonstrate here, and if you're taking a look on the A3 amendment on page 2, you'll see where those three areas come from. First of all, the ability to plan instruction and assessment, and then demonstrate their ability to organize that curriculum. Second, be able to demonstrate how to develop students' understanding of academic content, as well as then third, develop evaluation criteria aligned with core academic standards and identified learning objectives. Ladies and gentlemen, this gets at the core of what we've been talking about. It's not about that everybody has the exact same pathway. It's that everybody has the same standards of effective practice. And really, that's what's already in statute, saying that we need to have effective teachers. Well, then, how do we assess that before they get into that classroom? Here it is. Doesn't matter what program that you go through, that all of them must hold up to the same standards. And so, Madam Chair, I would hope that we would adopt this today, move this bill forward, and Representative Mariani, I hope that you would be friendly to this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kaff. I would like to call down Karen Ballmer, too, from the Board of Teaching, because they are working on the PERCA, and to hear her comment on just where you are in the process. But Representative Mariani, would you go ahead and comment on this amendment, please?
Well, Madam Chair, members, if you remember when I my first amendment, the first amendment that I laid before you, in fact, had this provision in it. I think the chair at the time expressed a desire to come back to that issue and not have a vote on it. Obviously, it's in my amendment, and so I crafted it because I think it's an important provision that lends value to this work. I'm certainly ready to vote for it, and so I think it's a great amendment. Obviously, I leave it to the committee and to the chair to vote on it. I think it's fair to vote on it personally, but I would hope that regardless of what the vote is today, that the TPA issue, both as an issue, doesn't go away for us, and frankly, that it doesn't go away for us as yoked to alternative pathways for licensure as well.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Ms. Ballmer, would you comment on where you are in the process in regard to the TPA and the PERCA when it comes to the Board of Teaching? Because we might have the cart before the horse here.
Absolutely.
Ms. Ballmer.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, while this language before you does not say teacher performance assessment, TPA, it sort of screams TPA. It is what the assessment is in terms of being built. The heart of the TPA is captured here in terms of actual classroom-based performance of a teacher that has to do with planning, instruction, and assessment. That is good teaching. It's not a fly-by-night. It's not show up and do your best. It's very much a planful event each and every minute of the day. And so this really does capture the essence of TPA. So that said, I love the language. It's fantastic. And we want to make sure that all teachers can do this. And regardless of preparation, in-state, out-of-state, alternative, otherwise, this is good teaching. Now, to your question, Madam Chair, about the timelines, it's a really important question. We are in what we are calling the pilot year. We have the Stanford team working quickly with us as an accelerated state to get all of these instruments up and operational. We have them, and in fact, we've got SCORE trainers being sent out to various places to be trained by the Stanford folks later this month in some of the content areas. You heard discussion earlier about content as very important. These are content-specific instruments. That's important. So we don't have them for all content areas yet. We are targeting a spring of 2012, so a year from now, to have this ready to scale statewide. So the effective date that you see here is really important. We will not be positioned to launch this statewide before the effective date that you have here of August 2012, and we are intending to stay on track and target our anticipated timeline as planned. But the timeline is important, and so there are some questions of implementation, the very real questions of getting this up and running across the state in all those 650 programs I shared with you the other day, and then the long-term sustainability and funding of it. So right now we have the gift of the Bush Foundation that has allowed us to move at this pace, which we're very grateful for, and so we anticipate moving forward as planned, but that's our context.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer. Representative Kath.
Madam Chair, Ms. Ballmer, do you know what that would be? Because I think members of the committee, I would be very willing to change the effective date if that would assist in this. As we've heard, this is good legislation. It makes a good bill better, and that's exactly what I'm here to do so that we can get this thing going and making sure that we have the adequate performance standards.
Representative, or Ms. Ballmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Kath, thank you for your flexibility in this. I think if we stay on target and all goes as planned, we can hit that effective date. We are working very much. My co-chair is Dr. Misty Sato, that you've heard mentioned before. She is an asset in this work, and we do believe that that we'll hit that target. But I can't sit before you today and guarantee that. Everything we see right now indicates that we're on track. And we would meet this, but.
And members, we are going to have a special time to hear more about the TPA and the PERCA from the Board of Teaching in some coming days. And I just believe it's putting the cart before the horse, that there's just so much involved here and a great expense, too, that I would hope that you would vote down this amendment. And we do have just a few minutes. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually, if we had this language in here, wouldn't be so fussy about the earlier language connecting this program to higher ed, because this would solve those problems. And if we agree on this, I think it's putting the cart before the horse to send off alternative teacher licensure without this. And it sounds like we all love this. So what is the reason when we could change the date if people are fearful? And of course, anything that's in the future that's in legislation, the date can be changed again. We've done that many times. So I fail to see, and I would ask Madam Chair, why, if Representative Kath is flexible on the date and you support this, would we not put it on today? Or is your intention to save this bill, these alternative teacher licensure bills, and not forward them until we've also had this discussion, because that makes sense to me. But what does not make sense is to insist upon putting the cart before the horse and sending this bill off before we can agree to attach this. It seems to me we have an opportunity for a lot of bipartisan agreement, but by not doing this amendment, sending them off, then we don't. And I'm perplexed as to why we couldn't so early in the session especially have some agreement on what we think would be best for students, because I think to have these assurances in place, then my other question also about the efficacy of the studies that show alternative teacher licensure does really well with students, which doesn't sound like we're going to get, also would be a moot point. So why wouldn't we do this, especially if we change the date?
Representative Greiling, you make very good comments. We're going to refer this to the K-12 committee because there is a cost involved, and so I think that's probably where we're going to have to debate whether or not we are going to reinsert this. But I think for this moment, I would prefer that members vote this down and we add it later. So with that said, yes, Representative Dabney.
Thank you. I'm wondering if Mr. Blankenship could come down and tell us whether he expects the teachers at Hiawatha Leadership Academy, a high-performing charter school in Minneapolis, to meet these criteria now, and if Ms. Wolf could come down and identify whether Teach for America core members are expected to meet these sorts of performance standards.
Well, that's up to those testifiers as to whether they want to do that. Members, we have another bill to hear, so we have to move quickly. We have to be out of here at 1:45 today. Ms. Wolf, are you ready to answer that intimidating question? Say your name for the record, please.
Yes, I am. Again, Kelly Wolf, Leonard Street and Diner, here on behalf of Teach for America. In regards to that, I believe that Daniel Sellers, the last hearing when Representative Mariani had this language in his amendment, did support that language and was confident that our teachers could meet those performance standards and kind of welcomed that challenge. And again, I think our wish is that if we are going to raise the standards for Teach for America teachers or any alternatively licensed teacher, that we would raise those standards for all teachers. And I think it's good language and something that Teach for America could certainly support and have in the past.
Mr. Blankenship, thank you.
Shannon Blankenship, yeah, on behalf of Hiawatha, I think we could definitely meet these standards, and I expect our teachers to not only meet these standards, but again, I keep reiterating this point, it's about the outputs, right? So what are we getting? How do we know? What are we measuring to make sure that our kids are on track, and not just for college, but for graduate school, right? Like, that's what we're trying to do. So thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you for that. It seems to strengthen the ease of supporting this amendment if the author supports it, Teach for America supports it, high-performing charter schools support it and are not afraid of it, that it seems to strengthen the bill and make for a better, as I think Representative Kath said, a good bill better.
Oh, Representative Dabney, there's no question I support this. I just think we need to be more thoughtful about progressing in the direction of adding this yet. So members, we need, Representative Kath.
Madam Chair and members, I really strongly encourage us to say that we should adopt this language today, because if indeed that there is a fiscal note, we have a process for this, and that is that in the Finance Committee, that should be handled then. Ladies and gentlemen, we're looking at sound policy here. We are an education reform committee that deals with policy issues. This is good policy. We have heard from every stakeholder right now that says that this is good moving forward. I am very excited in offering this that we can work in a bipartisan fashion to say that we now have an alternative standard by which we can move this bill forward that's going to alternatively license our teachers. And if there is a fiscal impact that's going to come about this, we have that next layer. And that is really the process by which we move forward here. And members, I would strongly encourage you to say that this is a good step forward for us, as well as a great step forward for this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kath. Members, we need to vote. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. 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 I think the amendment is adopted, if I heard correctly. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members, and we have another amendment, the DE2. Is anyone offering that, or the A2? Okay, not hearing anyone offering that. We need to move to vote on this bill. Representative Mariani, closing comments.
Yeah, Chair, just very quickly, first of all, I want to thank the chairperson for scheduling this bill early. It's an important issue that's been around here for a long time. I know the chair herself many years ago carried a bill very similar to this, and so I know that your passions are very much about opening up these pathways that we share those passions, Madam Chair. I want to thank you for the fair way in which you conducted this hearing, and I want to also thank the members for the very open, deliberate, and intelligent way in which we engage on this discussion. This issue has been politically hot, you know, for a number of years. I don't think it should have been in the first place, and I think it's our role as legislators to oftentimes stand up to the political heat that's in the kitchen and move forward with good legislation on the part of the people. We do have the Representative Raffles bill coming up, I look forward to ongoing discussion among the two bills and discussion in the next committee, and look forward to working with all of you on this. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani renews his motion that House File 3, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the K-12 committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and this bill will move to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair,
you very much, Representative Mariani. You have done yeoman's work on this, believe me. I have great respect for what you've done. Representative Graffalo. House File 63, everyone. Hope that's in your packets. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Chair, and I believe you probably want to use the DE1 amendment. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Graffalo, I will move the DE1 amendment to House File 63. And is there any discussion?
Wait a minute.
Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted, and Representative Graffalo, will you point out the differences between this and House File 3, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and members, while I would not profess to be an expert on the gentleman from St. Paul's bills, I think the two big differences, number one, as Representative Greiling highlighted earlier, is the issue of linking or delinking to higher education institutions. The second issue is the one that Mr. Sellers and Mr. Blankenship brought up last week with regards to the issue of reciprocity, where you have candidates or teachers who have demonstrated a proven track record of improving student achievement in other jurisdictions, and the issue of when they come to Minnesota, whether it's required, what availability they have with regards to reciprocity and being able to teach in Minnesota. Those would be the two biggest distinctions. There are other differences, but I'm happy to answer any questions from members of the committee.
Members, are there questions? Representative Depke.
I'm sorry. I'm going to pass.
It's okay.
I'm still getting organized. Sorry about that.
I see no other members wanting to ask questions. Ms. Alzweiger, I know you want to comment. Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to comment on House File 63 as it's been amended? I guess just Ms. Alzweiger, come down and again say your name for the record. And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzweiger, Education Minnesota. I'm going through my papers here right now.
It is a flood, isn't it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do have some concerns about House File 63 that aren't addressed. Excuse me. We have some concerns about House File 63, in that there isn't, and I'll make these very brief because I know that you have, we have to get out of the room. Some of the main concerns are that there isn't a requirement to be connected to the college. There is, if you can bear with me for 1 second, Madam Chair.
While we're waiting, perhaps Representative Peterson could give us an update on Baby Watch 2011. Any new news?
We're still good on that. So, if you see me bolt out of the room, then you'll know. So,
Ms. Halswiker.
Madam Chair, we're concerned about, as I stated, the college piece. We also are concerned that there's an language in here that would allow an individual who was licensed in another state, let's just say South Carolina, Louisiana, it doesn't matter where. If I, as a teacher who was licensed in Georgia, if I was licensed in Georgia and I moved to Minnesota and I wanted to teach in Minnesota and didn't meet the Minnesota standards, I could have a letter written by an administrator in Georgia to say that I was doing well compared to the Minnesota standards and that I could be a licensed Minnesota teacher. I think there are a number of provisions in this bill that I think are problematic, and I think that we'll be going forward into the next committee, and since I've already testified a fair amount today, I think I'll just hold off on some of those concerns. But I know that Representative Garofalo has the very best intentions, and we do want to work with him to get this bill to work for teachers and students.
Thank you, Ms. Halswiker. Ms. Saccone, did you want to testify?
Mary Saccone, Parents United for Public Schools, again, supportive of alternative teacher licensure. And I just wanted to point out that that one piece that we had in the House File 3 would be something that we would not like lost, if it's possible to put that particular provision in with the Board of Teaching doing the report on efficacy.
And, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
I believe it is in there.
Yes, it is in.
Very sorry.
Subdivision 9, reports 4.30. Very good. Are there others? Representative Moran has a question. Representative Garofalo, get ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back and talk about some of the biggest difference that I see between your bill and Mariani's bill. And I just go back and I remember the first day as we came into this committee and began to talk about why we decided to be on the Education Reform Committee. And what I heard from so many of us around the table is that a goal of us was to close the achievement gap and to ensure that every child is successful in our school system and in life. And so what I do not see in your bill is the need to reflect cultural and racial diversity of students in having teachers who look like teachers in the classroom and the need to close the achievement gap. I think we really need to be intentional. I think we need to really pay attention to that language and have that language as part of the bill so that in our goal to ensure that we have great teachers in the classroom, that the teachers are able to relate and build good relationships with the students, with the pupils in which they are going to be teaching. So for me, my question to you is, I guess, is that not a need in your
Representative
bill?
Garofalo?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Moran, I'm going off of memory here, Representative Mariani's bill. I think the important thing is that Representative Mariani's bill and in my bill, we are leaving that decision locally decided by school board members and by those who are doing the hiring. If I remember it, and I can just get a head nod or I can disagree with that. With regards to my understanding, at least when I remember reading Representative Mariani's bill, is that sort of was almost a justification or a reason behind allowing it. Ultimately, the decisions made by the local school boards and the hiring, if it improves student achievement and it helps the kids, I don't really care what the reasoning is. Certainly, we want to have classroom teachers who are good role models and look like the communities that they're teaching in. I think that's important. But at the end of the day, it's all about what's good for the kids. So the language in the Mariani bill, as I remember it, and I would certainly be open to the author correcting me if I'm wrong, it was explaining the rationale for why local school districts should have that decision making.
Representative Moran,
I would just like to make a point that I think that is really important, that the reflection of teachers looks like the body of KISS, and there's some kind of relationship with that community to build great students, great pupils, and that it is part of that need to close the achievement gap. I just like seeing the language. I think it's important. We need to be intentional because sometimes intent is not good enough. We need to look at the outcomes. And right now, our outcomes tell us that communities of color are failing at large numbers. And it is my belief that if we are not intentional in saying we want to close the achievement gap, that can be lost in the process.
Representative Garofalo, did you have a response to that? Members, are there any other questions? And are there other testifiers? We have a Mr. Heller. Very quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Say your name for the record, please.
Richard Heller.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Proceed.
In this House File 63, on line page 1, line 1.17, you use the word pedagogy. Pedagogy is a universal design for learning. And its principles, including its assessments, the how, what, and why learning included in that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just to represent Moran's question earlier, I think it's safe and objective to say that the language in House File 63 can certainly be inclusive of the language that's much more specific in House File 3. In House File 3, in other words, the program can only be offered and exist if it meets these conditions. Or there could well be some other conditions that school districts may come forward in seeking for an alternative pathway reality in their school district. And I guess for us, I think Representative Garofalo, shares this pretty openly. I guess for us, the question is, it seems to me the question is, to what degree then do we say as a legislature that we trust the local school districts to be able to make intelligent decisions about how to best apply this new tool in their district? In House File 3, we're very specific about what those conditions are and therefore obviously negate other possible conditions that we're not addressing at this point. So probably safer to say that the House File 63 certainly opens up more conditions that we trust local school districts to decide. House File 3 is very prescriptive about what those conditions would be.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Graffel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for committee's knowledge on this, during the last session, a former member who was opposed to Representative Mariani's legislation brought up the red herring that because of the language in Representative Mariani's bill, this somehow implied racial quotas or somehow was a justification for that. And that was a concern going forward that I want to make sure that people are not falsely implying that against a former member of the legislature, someone who's not here anymore. But I want to let Representative Miranda know I'm not necessarily opposed to putting that in there. That's something I'm willing to work with you on going forward as long as the focus, again, is on student achievement, but I want members of the body to know that. That was a concern for why that wasn't there.
Thank you, Representative Graffalo. We have a couple of amendments. No, I already called him. Representative Kapp.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if it's appropriate at this time, then I would like to offer the A1 amendment.
Representative Kapp offers the A1 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Members, this is the identical amendment that we just adopted on the last bill, which is to place in there the performance assessment for all candidates in the three areas.
Is there any discussion? Representative Graffalo, do you have a comment?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, while I do not object to the language, I do want to exercise my defense of the committee chair in controlling their process. I would certainly want to have such discretion given to me in my committee. So, members, at this time, while I do not oppose the content, I would urge you to vote no on the Kath amendment. This is something I can work with Representative Kath on between this committee and my committee. And again, I would ask that you vote no on this amendment.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would like to urge my colleagues to support the CAF Amendment because we are in a policy committee here, and this is policy. And the Finance Committee can keep the language or they can remove it at a later date. But it seems that if we're in a policy committee, this is where we ought to initiate this language.
Any others? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested, and do you have your roll call sheet ready? Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask Representative Kath, is this coming as a standalone bill also to be heard?
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, there is a standalone bill, but that is specific to TPA. Representative Morrow has that bill.
And Representative McFarland, for your information, there will be standalones in regard to other matters that will come with the TPA, too. So it's going to be discussed in this committee, and there will be bills. Seeing no other discussion, roll call has been called, and Melissa, you will call the roll.
Representative
Erickson? No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Barrett?
No.
Representative Benson?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Greiling?
Aye.
Representative Kath?
Aye.
Representative Kiefer?
No.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative McFarlane?
No.
Representative Moran?
Aye.
She said aye.
Aye.
Representative Murdoch?
No.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Norton?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Peterson Brandon?
No.
Representative Peterson Sandra?
Aye.
Representative Woodard?
No.
There being 12 no's and 9 yeses, the motion does not prevail. Representative Graffalo, on your behalf. Oh, there's another amendment, the AZ, I'm sorry. Oh, the A2. Representative Kath, offer your amendment, please.
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment. Members, this amendment is altering the bill in a way to make sure that there is a link to a college or university. You'll see that on page 3, it adds it on page line 4.
Madam Chair, what amendment are we on?
This is the A2 amendment. Do you not have a copy of it, Representative Garofalo?
I do, but it's not matching up with what I'm hearing from the author. So go ahead. Continue.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative.
Page 3, line 4, what you'd see here is after purpose adds and with a college or university has a board-approved teacher program. And so our goal here is that we would get that link between college and university to ensure that all these programs have that same methodology moving forward.
Madam Chair, I have
Representative Garofalo.
I have the A2 amendment for House File 3, so if I could get a copy of the, I have the wrong A2 amendment. So thanks. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it appears this is just Representative Kathy, you're relinking to higher ed, right?
Yes.
That's okay. What he's doing.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I would oppose the amendment. Again, when you heard, as you heard from Hiawatha and from Teach for America, the we want to have flexibility here. We don't want to have dependencies built into the system. We want to make sure that we have flexibility and options. One of the purposes of this legislation is to remove barriers and obstacles to getting qualified teachers into the classroom. And so, Madam Chair and members, I would ask you to vote no on the respectfully to vote no on the A2 amendment offered by Representative Kaff.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like, since we didn't put the other one on, I would like to see how people vote on this one as well, so I'll request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested, and we will have a roll call. Is there other discussion? Hearing none, we'll hear the roll.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Depke.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Barrett.
No.
Representative Benson.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Dabney.
Aye.
Representative Greiling.
Aye.
Representative Kaff.
Aye.
Representative Kiefer.
No.
Representative Peel.
No.
Representative McFarlane.
No.
Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Murdoch.
No.
Representative Myra.
No.
Representative Norton.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
No.
Representative Peterson Sandra.
Yes.
Representative Woodard.
No.
There being 9 yeses and 12 noes, the motion does not prevail. So, Representative Graffel, on your behalf, I will move House File 63 as amended to be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Whoops, those opposed say no.
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 The motion prevails and the bill is forwarded to K-12 Finance. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.